Sean Alexander is with us here on Sports Byline. What did you know about Seattle after you got drafted? Had you ever been there before, Sean?
I didn't know anything about Seattle. Matter of fact, without being a student, I mean, I wouldn't have even thought anything. I couldn't tell you. I knew it was in Washington, but I couldn't tell you where in Washington it was. That's how far Seattle was from my mind. And it was so funny, as my only thought of that was playing Tecmo Bowl. I remember Washington had Kurt Warner as their running back, but I couldn't tell you who the quarterback was. And then my brother, who always was kind of Mr. Insightful, he always says, "Hey, I think Mike Holmgren from the Green Bay Packers is your head coach." I was like, "Okay, well, we've got a good coach." That was about all I knew about Seattle. And then when I got there, you know, everything changed. It happened so quickly.
Well, the one thing I learned, because I came from Boston and went out to Seattle, and when I was out there, they always told me about all the rain. In the first year, they had a drought out there. I said, what are we talking about, rain? I found out the next 10 years.
Right. You know what? I don't know when you got out there, but I feel like I caught the end of that drought. I was like, what are y'all talking about? It doesn't even rain out here. It's beautiful. The mountains, the sky, you know, the water. And then it started raining. I feel like I remember one time it rained like 70 days in a row. I'd never heard of anything like that before. Yeah, the rain is serious in Seattle. And, you know, you got to start playing play on words with, yeah, we're raining out here, R-E, you know what I mean? You know, we're going to bring the rain. You know, otherwise you would drive yourself crazy. And the thing is, people in Washington State, they don't even realize it. Like, you know, my wife, when we came out to D.C., she wanted to run outside the first day, and I was like, "Sweetie, it's November. It was around Thanksgiving. It's November out here." Oh no! She grabbed some shorts and wanted to go. And she went out there, and that wind hit her, and she came running back in the house like, "Oh, yeah." I was like, "No. This is real weather out here. Like, just because the sun's out does not mean it's warm like it is in Washington State."
I got to tell you, I went to Cairo Television. You know Cairo, of course,
yes,
up in Seattle. And I was working with CBS Network Sports, go off and do NFL games and other sports assignments on the weekend. But because of my background as a pilot, the only job they had open was as a weatherman. Now, you know what the weather up there. I mean, those people live and die. They don't care who the anchors are or who the sports guy is, but they do care who the weatherman is.
Yeah, and so you was way more famous, especially before I got there, because it was not like everybody wants to call that sports. It was more of a baseball town before I got there. They loved the Seattle Mariners, and my goal was for it to shift from weather and baseball to only football and be the 12s, you know? That was my goal.
Well, it was so funny because if I predicted rain for 2 or 3 days, especially, say, on the opening of boating season, I'd be on one of the sailboats going through the Montlake Cut, and people would be throwing water balloons at me.
Yes, that was a big thing. And you know, wasn't that area awesome, you know, be able to to go there? And I remember watching Gasworks Parks, the fireworks and all that. That was those were just great moments. And so life gets taken over by football, but like I had some just great memories and family moments. My wife and I just kind of walking through Gasworks Parks and watching fireworks. Those are some of the great moments I had about Seattle on a beautiful sunny day, looking at the water and the Space Needle. It was beautiful.
We talked about Gene Stallings, but what about Mike Holmgren? When you met him at first, what was your reaction to him?
Wow, you know what? I didn't know what to expect out of him, but I came in there and was like, "Hey, this is the big show." And I was like, "The big show? Okay, this is going to be great." Because once again, I like people that carry themselves like they're going to do something big and valuable. I want to be with those kind of people. And you know, it was really cool meeting him. You know, I tell people all the time, I'm the Seahawks all-time leading rusher, but when I first met Mike told me, "Hey, Sean, you're probably only going to carry the ball about 14 times a game because we just don't, I throw the ball in my system. I've had Joe Montana, I've had Steve Young, I've had Brett Favre, and now we're going to get a quarterback here, and we're going to figure out a way to throw that thing around." And I was like, "Wow, okay, so my job is to make you not want to throw it." You know what I mean? And So I would always pick these little goals, but that was really like how our relationship started off, which, you know, of course you don't take offense. You want him to do what he does best. But I was like, wow, like his idea of playing football is really about throwing the ball. And I was like, how are we going to do this? And so I had to work on the passing game because I know he had other running backs that he coached before. That was great. Roger Craig was the first 1,000-yard rusher and 1,000-yard receiver. And so for me, I was like, okay, so I've got to go do some things that are special without the football, so they give me an opportunity to be able to carry the football, and that was the goal.
When did the light come on for him about the talent that you had and how he had to use that talent as a running back rather than emphasizing the passing as much as he did?
You know, I think that really, I don't even know how to say it without being airy. I think it was because my talent was noticed so quickly. You know, there a guy would run in the hole, and I'd juke him out, and I'd run for a 60-yard touchdown. It happened so quick. They'd be like, wait, what? I was kind of running that play. He said, there was times where, at the beginning of my career, he would call a play thinking I was going to get 2 or 3 yards. He looked down at his play chart for what was a good 2nd and 7 play, and we've done flipped the field, or I done broke for a long run. And he's like, oh, well, wait a minute. He said he had to learn how to adjust to things happening like that because I would make plays so quickly. And it was a fun learning process for him, but even for me, because I was used to coming from high school, we run the ball. Bama, we run the ball, and I come here and I'm talking to a coach about plays I like to call. But knowing that if I said too many plays, he might only run one of them and run. You know, it was a weird dynamic. But I knew that his mind was brilliant as a coach, and so I trusted that whatever he was going to do, he was going to put it in position for me to be better and me to be great. And one of the great things that the unsung hero that never gets credit is Stump Mitchell, my running back coach. He's one of the greatest Arizona Cardinal players, running back, punt returners. But he was the running back coach for me in Seattle and just teaching me how to play the game at a higher level. And then also adding to my faith, like, you know, God's in control, Sean. You get better because that's what you're supposed to do. And how we want to get you the ball, we'll let us figure that out. And so those two things, just a part of that life, was just amazing. And he's at Arizona now and coaching great and still making players better. It's pretty sweet and special of a man that Stump Mitchell is.
Certainly the apex of your career up in Seattle was the 2005 season in a game against the Green Bay Packers. You set the single-season touchdown record at 28, and you tied Priest Holmes' record of 27 rushing touchdowns for a season. And you also won your first NFL rushing title with 880 rushing yards, and it also meant that you had led the NFC for the 2nd consecutive year. That season, what all came together that made it so special?
You know, we were just in a special groove. I had 5 linemen and a fullback and 2 tight ends that we had all played together. I know the line, at least 4 of the 5 linemen, we had played together for 5 years. Fullback 5 years. So you got 6 guys on the offensive line and a quarterback that's been together that long. Matt audibled us into plays the right way, and we were just in a groove. Everybody had a job. You know, you're going to block this guy. You know, of course, there's 11 defensive players. You get Hasselbeck, our quarterback, and me. We can't block those guys. So it's really 9 on 11. And Matt's job was to get one guy to be off, to be out to play just by position, and then I would be one-on-one with the other guy. And usually what happens in football is somebody barely doesn't get their job done where I don't have the attacking angle on the guy that I'm one-on-one with. But that year, we just pulled together every one-on-one battle, I knew I had a legitimate chance to win. And so they wasn't running in the hole, and I'm barely getting the ball. I'm running in the hole, and I'm attacking the hole, and they're now having to defend me. And we won many battles that year. We won many battles for that string of years, but that year was special. And I know that I came out of 7 games that year in the 4th quarter, and I came out of 2 games at halftime. So I sat out 9 quarters that year and had to have 1,800 yards and 28 touchdowns. I think that arguably could have been the greatest season in NFL history because the touchdowns were just coming and we were in such a groove. But we were an odd team for a running back to have that great of a year to win by such big margins. That usually doesn't happen. Usually if your running back's having a good year, O.J. Simpson, Jamal Lewis, LaDainian Thompson, usually their teams are still around that 10-win, 8-9-10-win season. We were winning. We won 13. We probably could have won 14 if we had played the last half of the Green Bay game at the end of the season. So it was just one of those special years where it just flew and everything went perfect.
One of the things I know is that NFL players play for a particular purpose, and that is to win a Super Bowl championship. You played in Super Bowl 40 against Pittsburgh, but you lost it 21-10. I'm sure you've put that into perspective, that particular game. What perspective do you have on that game?
You know, it was tough. I still, somebody asked me the other day, well, hey, do you ever really get over that game? And And you've known me well enough to know that my life is based on Jesus, and so I'm gonna be okay. You know what I mean? I'm gonna get to worship in heaven one day, so I'm cool with that. But on earth, that game still hurts, because no matter what I do, I'm always the guy that lost the game that from 8 years old is the biggest game that's going to be in your life. So I have to always deal with that, and that's okay. But the greatest perspective during it was, gosh, we could have done a couple little different things, and we'd have won. And everybody wants to blame the refs for that. I'm not good at blaming other people. I like to take ownership. And you know, we didn't run the ball as much as we normally did, and we didn't we had a couple guys go down with injuries. So it was just a perfect negative storm. We had so many penalties. We were the least penalized team in the NFL, and we had tons of penalties in that game. So if you lose two safeties, you know, your game plan shifts a little bit, so we're throwing the ball a little bit more. A couple of guys go down, you have a couple of flags, and you're still playing in the NFL with NFL players that are good players. It doesn't always turn out good. And what I remember is, and what I always take with me is, don't ever take for granted the little things. You know, you fix one of those little things, and we're probably Super Bowl champions.
One of the things I alluded to a little bit earlier is that Sean is involved in a number of things. He wrote a book, an excellent book, if you have a chance to find it, Touchdown Alexander. And also, he has a podcast called Finish the Game. This is an important project. Tell me a little bit more about it.
Yeah, you know, I've always had this desire to impact people's lives and to stir people to be great. And so a friend of mine, Claude Jennings, who's DC-born, one of DC's big-time producers, he told me, he said, hey, you know, a lot of times guys can only do sports. And I was asked to do NFL Network, and even today they asked me, could I come do some stuff with them? I've been asked to do stuff with ESPN, and I didn't want to just do sports. And he said, sometimes people can get into the Christian world, and they could talk about their faith, and I'm a lover of Jesus, and will chase him every day. With all I got, and it says, but you know, you have an opportunity where you can actually do both, and you could take your sports life and kind of explain some good biblical principles, some things that could actually let people become successful in their life. And will they be amazing MVP athletes? We don't know. Will they end up becoming great men of faith? We don't know. But we can actually plant the seed in people to kind of be something special, be MVPs to their community, and at the end of the day, help finish the game of life. And that's what we want to do. And so we started that process, and it's been amazing. The lives of both athletes and people in the spiritual, in the church world that said, hey, I needed to hear that. You know, you challenged me about being a father, and, you know, we're pregnant with our ninth child, my wife and I. You know what? I can do that. I complain a lot about being a father, or some women about being a mother. You explained some things about your faith, about where God's really in control, and actually the real battle is an identity crisis. Like, if you actually knew who God said you was, and you actually believed it, you would actually not be upset as much. You wouldn't feel as guilty as much. You wouldn't be as angered as much. You'd actually be able to get back on the horse and finish the game. And I saw that well. And then there was tons of high school and college age young men that would say, you know what, I don't have a father figure, but I've actually learned that I can take some principles from your show and live in, and put them in my life. And I want to be an MVP to my community. I want to be a game finisher. And it's been really, really special. So I've been telling everybody as humbly as I can, man, thank you all for listening, because the goal is really simple. I had some uncles and some father figures that were in my life that sometimes they said the most profound things to me, but they stuck with me for years, and they still stick with me today. And I said, well, if I had that opportunity to be a person that could profoundly impact somebody's life, give them a way of thinking and living that could change them forever, to bring glory to God, and also let them actually have a shot at a successful life and being an MVP to somebody else's life, I would have to do it. And this is what Finish the Game is. And it's, the process has been beautiful, and we're walking through it right now.
I want to thank you very much for the time that you've provided us and telling us the story about your life and about your career, because I've watched it from beginning to end, and this is a great message. Take care, my friend. You're welcome back here anytime, Sean.
Hey, thank you. Maybe we'll do it again. Finish the game.
You got it. Sean Alexander, running back who played 9 seasons in the NFL, 8 of those with the Seattle Seahawks. We continue on Sports Byline.